Begin the current daf, Masechet Baba Metzia, daf Kav Dal. Begin on the top line of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, where we open up our Perek HaMakabel, which was talking about a person who's renting a field from another person. We spoke about the customs that apply to that, which have to go like the Minig HaMakim. There's also the certain expectations that were there, which that's what our previous mission discussed, regarding if the well dried up, and other things regarding what the expectation of the field was being rented from. Now, Amar Papa, he clarifies something regarding the Mishnais of our Perek. He says, Hani Tarti Masnita Kamaisa. These first two Mishnais that we had up until this point, from the beginning of the Perek, Mishkachas Law, their halachas apply, Bein Mechach Renusa. In other words, when we say these halachas that of Hamakabel Sodom Mechaverai, which literally means say someone who receives a job of taking a field of someone else's field, so on that, Rav Papa is saying that would apply, for example, let's say the halacha of the first Mishnah, which said that if the custom is to reap, you have to reap. If the custom is to uproot the produce, then you have to uproot it. There, the halacha would apply for either one to complain, whether it be the landowner or the one who's renting, whether it's in a situation of kablanus or whether in a situation of chachranus, which again, kablanus we explained is like an arisus, where you give a certain amount of the produce, the profits, to the owner, whereas chakirus is regarding that you give a certain set amount, unrelated to what the profits of the produce is, you give a certain amount of rent to the landowner, where that halacha of that, whatever the custom is to do with that guy's field, that's what you got to do, regardless if it's a arisus, a kablanus, or chakirus. So too, let's say, regarding the previous Mishnah, which is the second of the two Mishnahs Rav Papa is referring to, which if let's say the spring, the well dries up. If let's say the guy had told him, Chachar li sada peis shlochen zu, which was one of the halachas we mentioned in the Mishnah, which we're going to shortly quote in the Gemara and elaborate on. Someone says, rent me your field. That's what chachiris really is, really a rental, because you set a certain amount you're going to pay him for. If he says, sada peis shlochen zu, this one, so just like by chachiris, if let's say the spring, the well would dry up, he would diminish from the amount that he owes him, same thing applies with kablanas. If let's say he accepted that, okay, I'm going to give you two-thirds or a third of the profits, everything goes now proportionally according to what the loss is because the well had dried up. So this halacha applies, again, bein mechach renusam, whether regards to, if let's say, he said he's going to give him a certain amount per year, or bein mekablusa, whether in this format of kablanus of arisus. Now, Tosfos points out, although that there is one halacha of the previous of the first Mishnah, which is that it said that just like they split in the produce, so too they split in the nikash and in regards to the straw, and that halacha actually does not apply with chakiris because dividing up the profits only applies to arisus, not to chakiris. But this is the primary concept of that Mishnah, which is the ratio of that Mishnah, which is what the custom is to rip out or to reap, that applies to both chakiris and kablanis. So that's where Rav Papa was saying that the first two Mishnahs, their halachas apply to both kablanis, which is arisus, and chachranis. But says Rav Papa, mikama elach. From here and on, the rest of the Mishnahs, that, as what Rashi says, he'll explain each one in their appropriate place, the Isa b'kabluna, lesa b'chachrenusa, the halachas that apply, if it's an arisus, like a shearcropper, it does not apply in the situation of chachranas, and the Isa b'chachrenusa, lesa b'kabluna, and the halachas that apply regarding someone that says a set amount to what he's renting the field for, would not apply to kablanas, to if he's doing a proportionate to the profits that he's getting, that's how he's paying, each halacha would be mutually exclusive to the other category. Now the Gemara continues to explain the halacha of a Mishnah, which we mentioned in passing just before. Im Amar Loi, if let's say the renter said to the landowner, Chachar li sada peis hashlochen zeh. So he didn't just say a field. He said, this field, which is sada peis hashlochen, he specified the type of field that it is, which is an irrigated field, thus indicating that the reason why he's renting it is because of the spring. Then said the Mishnah, oh, in that situation, if the spring dries up, then he could be menakolem and adam. He doesn't have to pay him the full amount that he made up, because he specified that was the reason why he's paying him for it. Now that he doesn't have that element anymore, he could diminish the amount of the rent. On that, the Gemara asks my mind, but why is that so? Lemalei, let the landowner tell the renter, Shema ba'alma amrilach, I only gave you a name. In other words, the field that you asked for is called a sodeh beis hashlochen. But I didn't rent you for the price that I was charging you because of the spring that helps irrigate the field, and that's why you're renting it for. So although we called it and you actually named it, you labeled it as a sada beis hashlochen, which is saying the irrigated field, which that's what the it seems like the halacha of the Mishnah is saying, is, oh, so you're specifying you're renting it for the spring. If it dries up, then you could diminish. On that, ask the Gemara, but why? Let him just say, let the owner say, I was giving you this irrigated field, but that doesn't mean that there has to be irrigation there. Because, as the Gemara explains, Mila Tanya, didn't we learn the Braisa as follows? If someone tells his friend, I'm going to sell you this land of a kor, which has a certain measurement of afra of earth, that's what I'm selling you. That's what he called it. He said, base kor afra, I'm going to sell you. Says the Braisa, Ava b'she'imay el lesach, even if actually the area of that land only has half a kor, which is what a lesach is, higiyoy, it's a sale. Why? Didn't he say he's selling him a base kor? Now he's only selling him half of that. Says the Braisa, shle machor le'el shma. When he said he's selling him a base kor offer, it's the name. It's called a base kor offer. Now, it doesn't actually have that area. But v'hud miskari, base kor. That land is called a base kor. Now, if in actuality it only has a lesach, that's not the point. It was just the title, the designation of the field, but it doesn't mean it actually has to have the base kor. So too, the Braisa continues. Let's see, says, karmani moichloch. I'm going to sell you a vineyard. Says the Braisa, Afa b'she'im b'gefanim. Even if there are no vines there in the quote grapevine, higili, it's a sale. Why? Shlei machrela elishma. It's a name that's known as Maisha's vineyard. So there's no grapevines. Yeah, but that's what it's known as, and he's selling that vineyard. B'hud miskari karman is called a vineyard. So therefore, it's a sale. So do paradis ani moichloch. He said, I'm going to sell you an orchard. Even if there's no pomegranates, there's nothing there for it to be an orchard, it's a sale. He sold him the name. It's called a paradis. But with Miskari Paradisa, since he called, I'm selling you a paradis, and this one's called a paradis, even though actuality there is no orchard there, there's nothing there, it's a sale. So therefore the Gemara concludes the question, Alma Amrile, so what do we see from the price? That the seller could tell the buyer, Shma ba'alma amrilach. What I sold you was a name. So, therefore, it's a sale. Hachanami, name alei, shema ba'alma amrilach. He should say, I sold you a name. Yeah, I sold you a beis hashlachim. Now, although that seems to connote that there's an irrigation system there, and now the well's drying up, so that's not what I rented from you. No, not true. I sold you a beis hashlachim. Just like when I sell you a karma, there's no vines there. It doesn't make a difference here, too. So, therefore, why could he be menakalei min adam? So, Amar Shmuel, he says, loy kasha. So, it's not a difficulty. Why not? Says, ha, this case of the Braisa that says, yeah, you could say Shema Ba'alma, was the Amr Lei Machir L'Chaycher. That's because it was the seller who used that term to the buyer. The seller, if the seller tells the buyer that a stay based Ashlach and I'm going to be Machir L'Ch, then he could tell him, Shema Ba'alma Amr L'Ch, just like in the Braisa, which the seller was saying, I'm going to sell you a paradise or a karma, and then there's no grapevines, there's nothing there. It doesn't make a difference. I was selling you a name. So you're right. According in the case of when it's the machker to the chaycher, when it's the seller to the renter, then yeah, he could say, I was just selling you a name. But says Shmuel, ha, the amr le chaycher le machker. In the case of our Mishnah, which said that he could diminish the value of how much he owes him, was because the renter, he specified it to the seller. As the Gemara explains, amr le machker le chaycher, when the owner tells that term to the renter, he could say, well, I was just telling you a name. I didn't guarantee it's going to be vines over there or that there's going to be a well over there. But if the renter is specifying when he's telling the landowner, hey, I'm going to want to rent from you a stebes ashlachin, then kapeidin, and he's particular, he's not saying shema ba'alma, he means to say he wants that, and therefore that's why the Mishnah said, because it's from the chaycher to the machir. Ravina, he gives a different interpretation. He says, no, in actuality, the Braisa and the Mishnah are both talking about where it's the owner is using that term when he's renting it to the renter. Now, but midukamar zeh, but to understand the halacha of the Mishnah, then why is it different than the Braisa, which says if it's the owner to the renter, then they can say Shema Ba'alma? Because in the Mishnah, the words are that he said, I'm going to rent you, stay based on Shlachan zeh. Now, mechlal, the koi begavaskin. If he's saying this, obviously they're in the field right now. So then the question is, Beis HaShlochen Lo Malei L'Meimer. So if he's saying this field, he's pointing to this, so why does he have to say the Beis HaShlochen? Obviously, it's the Beis HaShlochen. We see which field you're talking about. Rather, says Ravina, that's why the Mishnah was telling us to Kama Lei Beis HaShlochen Kedikai Mahashta. He was telling him, not just this field, this stay Beis HaShlochen, which is as it is right now, which is with irrigation, Therefore, when it dries up, then he's going to be able to menakel ben adam, even though it's from the machke to the chayicher, and you could usually say shema ba'alma, but that's when you didn't say an additional superfluous term, which indicates that no, not just as a name, but actuality as it is right now, which is with irrigation. Therefore, if it loses that, he can be menakel ben adam, he could diminish the price of the rent that he had guaranteed to the owner. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on this theme of this parak of Mahamakabal Sadeh Mechaver, someone that receives a field from his friend in regards to some type of rental agreement. As we said from Rav Papa, that those that are going to apply to Chachiris are not going to apply to Kablanis, and those that apply to Kablanis are not going to apply to Chachiris. So either way, says the Mishnah, if someone rents a field from his friend, Vahivira, and then he leaves it fallow, he doesn't plow it, he doesn't plant it, doesn't do anything to the field. Says the Mishnah, so Shaman Isa, so we evaluate how much was this field worthy of producing, and then the worker, the renter, has to give that portion of the value to the owner, which as Rashi points out, based on Rav Papa's teaching, that this halacha would obviously only apply to what we call kablanis, which is arisa, so sharecropping, which it gives a part of the profits, whether it be half, a third, or a quarter, to the landowner. So since this was their proposition, and he's supposed to give a share of the profits, and he was supposed to work the field, and he didn't, so okay, that loss that you're taking as a worker, fine, but what's with the landowner who's supposed to get a certain profit, that what the projected profits would have been, he has to give that to the landowner. But obviously, regards to chachranis, that wouldn't apply to this halacha, because what's the point of evaluating how much it would have produced? It doesn't make a difference. Either way, the renter has to pay that set amount to the owner, and regardless of the guy plants it or not, it doesn't make a difference to the landowner. So this halacha obviously applies to the halacha of arisus, of kablanis. And the reason why he has to pay him is shekach kaisel, because that's what he wrote in the document. He wrote, im oiver, if I'm going to make the land fallow, meaning unplowed, and nothing done with it, v'loy evad, and I won't do any work that's required for the field, ashalam b'mitava, I will pay you the good that it should have had grown. And that's why, says the Mishnah, that he's required to pay him for what the projected growth would have been, because he didn't do his job of plowing and planting the field. Now, the Gemara explains that this halacha, the Mishnah of the Stam Mishnah, which is Remeir, that Remeir ha-yadayrish loshen hedyu, Remeir would expound the vernacular of common people. In other words, that the way regular people, when they would write their documents, not based on the chachamim's takonis, but rather when they would write a document, an IOU to the friend, so Remeir would expound the terminology to actually base the halacha on the words that were used. The Tanakh, like in the Braisa, that like the halacha of our Mishnah. Remeir, I mean, he says the words that the common people use in their documents of a kablanis, of arisas, that the aris writes to the owner, to the landowner, im oiver v'loy evad, if I leave it fallow and I don't work it, ashal b'metava, I will pay you in the best. And from that, those words, Remeir inferred, okay, so then the projected growth, which is the metava, he has to go ahead and pay him if he doesn't end up plowing and planting that field. So the Gemara continues with other tanoim that would expound the Lashon Hedyot. Rabbi Yehuda ha-yidarish Lashon Hedyot, he would expound the words used by common people. The tanoim, like Linda Bryson. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, he says, other may be carbon ashal ishta. A person has to bring a carbon of a wealthy person regards to his wife. So, for example, let's say when a woman gives birth or if she has tzaraz, so she's obligated in the carbon, the husband has to bring his wife's karbanis. That's a responsibility the husband has. Now, if the husband is wealthy, he can't say, well, my wife, she has no assets, she has no money, she should be exempt with bringing a carbon ani. That's a tribute that it knows, although there are certain things that go proportionally to the amount of money that a person has, for example, carbon oil b'yayrid, so he cannot say that she has no money, because he's responsible, he's liable, and since he's an usher, he's a wealthy person, he has to bring a carbon usher for his wife. Continues Rabbi Yehuda, v'chein kol carbon v'carbon shechayavis, and it actually applies to every type of carbon that she's obligated in, except for neder and nedavis, where that she takes voluntarily. But rather, for example, let's say when she becomes a zava, she has to bring a carbon, or an asham, which in other words, when she sins, she has to bring asham or chatas. Those are the things that she's going to be chayav to bring a carbon. Those are the things that he has to go ahead and bring it for her. Now, on that, Rabbi Yehuda says that for any carbon that she was liable, even before they got married, he has to bring for her. What's the reason? Shekach kaisev la, because that's what he writes to her. Achrayis to islach alai, the liability that you have on me, min kadmes dona, that what was even before this point, meaning even regarding the obligations that you had before we got married and you still have the carbon that's waiting for you to bring, I have to bring that carbon, not just even your current carbons, but even the previous ones. And again, if he's an usher, he has to bring a carbon usher for her. Now, actually, that was according to our girsa, which Tais explains according to that girsa. Rashi brings a different girsa from Tais Kainim, which is actually not regarding what he writes to her, but what she writes to him, which is when she gets divorced. And Rashi says that the words of our girsa doesn't work well with Rashi's interpretation. But that was Rabbi Huda who expounded the words that we use, that they wrote for each other, which he wrote of this, Achrayis Tislach Alai Mikamas Tana, and therefore, since those words say that, he's responsible for even previous karbanos. So it says the Gemara, Hil Hazakan Hayudarish Lashon Hegyin. Hil the elder would expound the words of common people to try to learn the Braisa. Anche Alexandria Hay Mikachin Es Nashaseim. The people of Alexandria would get engaged, halachic engagement, to their wives, which is the giving of the ring in our chuppas. And then, however, which would be, let's say, 12 months later, when they would go to the chuppah, which is the nisuin part, which we do right after we do the ring, which is the kedushin, other men would come and grab away the woman and take that woman as a wife. So the sages wanted to make the children of all those people in Alexandria mamzerim, because here we have a woman that already had erusin, which makes her forbidden to all other men. So on that practicality point, she's an ashesis. And then this other man grabs her away and takes her as a wife. So all the children are mamzerim, are illegitimate children. That Amalan Hil Azak and Hil the Elder tell them, no, hivilu ksubis imchem. Bring me the ksubis of your mothers, which were written to them on the day they got engaged, when they got the ring. So hivilu ksubis imen. So they brought him the ksuba of these women that were taken away, their mothers, meaning of those ladies, which were the mothers of these children that the Chacham wanted to say mamzerim, umatza shekasban, and he found that it was written as follows: likashetikansi lechupa, when you come to me into the chupa for nisuin, then havelili into, then you will be for me as a wife. So it indicates that the kedushin, which was making the har a wife, was on that condition. In other words, that the kedushin actually was not chal until she would come to the chupa. Now those other men grabbed away the woman before she came to the chupa. So they didn't make the children mamzerim because she actually was never engaged halachically to that man, because it was based on the stipulation that they'll have a chuppah and they never had a chuppah, so the children were never mamzerim because the women were not eshes. Again, that was because he extrapolated and interpreted the words of the ksuba that the people would write. So Jibishubin Karchai Dersh Lashon Hadi, he also expound the words of the common man. The Tanakh like Linda Bryce, Jibishubin Karchai Imer, he says, Hamava es chaveri. If someone lends his friend money, so the lender cannot take a mashkin, collateral security, through an agent of the court, for take a mashkin, which is yesim mechayve, which is worth more than the debt itself. Why? What's the reason? Because the words that they would use, which they would base halacha on, as we said, because this is what the borrower would write as a document to the lender. Tashlumta de islach alai. The payment that you have on me, the meaning that I owe you, kol kaval dichi, whatever is the equivalent of this. In other words, as Rashi fills in some of the blanks, if the lender had actually what's called an ovet, security, he had collateral, but sometimes the borrower needed it back for an extended period of time. So if the lender would return it for an extended period of time, what the borrower would do is that he would evaluate the collateral that had already been given to the lender, and he would write him in the document as follows, that all the payment that you have on me, you should be able to collect the value of the collateral that you originally had, but that you gave back to me. Now, therefore, you run into the problem, if the collateral is going to be more than the debt itself, it's going to come out, since those are the words that they write, that the lender is going to be collecting more than what's appropriate. So again, because, says Rabbi Shimon Karcha, since those are the words that they write, so we based halacha based on that, we redarshan that, say, okay, then they can't take now any more collateral more than the value, because since they write, you could collect from the value of the collateral which you took, which you gave back to me, and if it's worth more, they're going to be taking more than the value of the debt. So therefore, you can't take more than what it's worth. Now, the Gemara asks on this halacha of Rabbi Shimon Karcha, so time and the cost of lehachi. So you're saying that the only way that the lender could go ahead and collect now is because the borrower writes him such a document. So we said based on that document, he can't collect, the collateral can't be worth more. But besides that allows the lender now to collect that value from the borrower which he really had the mashkin, but he gave it back to the bar. The Gemara asks, sounds like he loikasabli hachi loikanya. But if let's say the bar would not write such a document to the lender, then the lender would not acquire the rights of collecting the value of the collateral which he gave back to the borrower. On that, the Gemara's question is, but why? Why does the borrower have to write this to the lender? But Vamar Yechon Yechon said, Mishkanai beheshav lehamashkin. Let's say a lender takes security, then he gives it back to the borrower because the borrower needs it. Umeis, and then the borrower dies. Shaimtai, so the lender could take that back. He could remove it malgavi banav from his children, from the orphans of the borrower. In other words, the chiddush in that is that that's not considered like other movable items of orphans which would not become indebted to a creditor. And the reason is, which is inherent in the Gemara's question from Rabbi Yechonon, because since he had already once taken it as a mashkin, he already acquired. So it's like already his for collection. Now, although he gives it back to the borrower, that's like a favor. It's like lending it to him, but it's really his. So therefore, you see that he could take it back even without a document. So what's Rav Shimon Karacha talking about with this document that he would write, and he's basing halachas on that, which is he darshan the lashon hadid. What do you need a document for? He can go ahead if he give it back and take it back anyway. So I think about continues on with Bayes. You write, but a hani kisiva legiroin. Writing a document helps if the value of the collateral ends up going down in value because he had given it back to the bar. Now the bar is using it all this time. If in his using it, it now diminishes the value. If there was no document written, yeah, he could go ahead and take back the collateral, but only that. So if let's say it was originally worth 100, now it's only worth 75, he would only have $75. But by writing a document, what the words that the borrower are writing in the document is that now you could collect from me the value of the collateral that he could collect from all his other assets. So he'll collect the $100 that it was worth when he gave it back to him, and not just getting the $75 worth in the mashkin that it's worth right now. Continues the Gemara like we were talking about, Rabbi Yisi ha-yiderish lashon hedyid. Rabbi Yisi would also expound the words of the common man. The Talmud learned the Braisa. Rabbi Yisi, he says, Malkum shenogu lasis kesuva milva. In the place where the custom is that they make the ksuba, which is the marriage contract, which is generally read by the chuppah, regarding a place where their custom is that they make this the ksuba into a loan, which another way of defining this is known as nixi term barzel. Which is that whatever is written in the document of the ksuba, they write that v'din adunya, that this dowry, which writes both ways, the obligations of the chassan to the kala, and the kala, meaning and her father, to the chassan. So they write that this nadunya, the hanalas lebimei nosh lebeisbala, which she's taking from her father's household to her husband's household. So on that, the chassan writes that they can collect from me when she gets widowed or when she gets divorced, which is how it is with a regular creditor or the regular debtor that to pay up. Like we write in all our loan documents, which as we write in our ksubis, which is Achrayis Dina Kabilas Alayis, says I accept responsibility. So essentially, whatever's written that the woman's coming with her assets into the marriage, which is written in the ksuba, it's written like a loan. As if the husband says, as if that all those assets were lent to me, and therefore like a loan, any responsibility is all on the borrower. So when she gets divorced or widowed, he has to go ahead and pay it all up, which is what's known as nechzi term basel, which is ironclad sheep, which she's confident, 100% guarantee getting your money back, in contrast to nechzi milug, which is really considered that she owns it, he just gets to eat the payers, and the losses are her losses. So says Rabbi Yisi, in the place where the custom is to make the ksuba into like a loan, so then geiva milva, so then it works the other way too, that the husband collects from the father of his daughter, meaning of his wife, whatever was written in the ksuba, as if he had lent him. So since the obligations in the ksuba are written both ways, so too, whatever was promised to the husband, he could collect from the father-in-law as a loan. Now, moreover, says Rabbi Yisi, in the place where the custom is lichfel, in other words, to evaluate whatever is being written in the ksuba, which is really being brought into the marriage, they actually would write double the true value of it. Now, why would they do that? Because it's a way of honor, of distinguishing and writing, wow, look how much he's giving her, look how much she's giving him, wow, and it makes it seem so endearing. So, actually, when she leaves the marriage, she doesn't get paid more than she's gaiva. She actually only gets half, because although it was written 800, it was really only 400. She only gets 400. Now, so too, as regarding the first half of Rabbi Yisalach, it works the other way too. Gaiva, so the chassan collects from his father-in-law, mechza only half. So though he's right, and this woman is bringing into the marriage $1,000, it should not bring that, it's only bringing 500. So therefore, when the chassan wants to collect the ksuba from his father-in-law, what he had promised in the dowry is going to be only half. Now, whereas Narbloi, actually gavu tilsa, they would actually only collect a third of what was written, because they would actually exaggerate it three times the amount of what it was really worth. Now again, this halacha of Rabbi Yossi is based on what people write, which is in the understanding of their what it's indicating is based on the minig of the makim, what you're writing. So if you write it as a milva, then you can collect as a milva. If, let's say, they write for one way as double, so then the other way is also understood as double. Again, he would expound the words of the common man to define the halacha criteria. Now, continuing on these halachas, Meremer, Migvinami, Shavcha. Actually, Meremer would actually collect in the ksuba whatever was written in ksuba. And even if it was written double, he would allow the chasen to collect from his father-in-law double the amount. Now, and then the Gemara asked Amalei Ravina Lor Meimer, they asked him, but time learned the Braisa that lichfal goyve mechtze, the custom was to double it, to double the value when you're writing the ksuba, then you only collect half, which is the true value. So why do you let the chasanim collect the double amount? So the Gemara says, loikash is not a difficulty. Hadikani minei. This, what I'm talking about, is when he would acquire from the father of his daughter, he would actually make a kinyan. So if they're writing ksuba $1,000, he would make an acquisition on the $1,000. Ha, the lekonimene. Here it's talking about where they didn't do a kinyan. So in the brisa, so yeah, then you understand from one way to the other way, which is since it's being exaggerated double, so the obligations both way only work that you only get half. But I'm talking about where they actually made a kinyan. As the Gemara actually illustrates it with a story, that Ravina Meshabach, Ravina exaggerated. He made it more, he wrote more than what's actually being brought in. And he wrote this for his daughter in her ksuba. Now Amalei, they said to him, let's make a kinyan from the master. You're writing this ksuba for your daughter. You're writing such a beautiful dowry for your son-in-law. Let's make a kinyan. Amalei said to them, no. If we're making a kinyan, I'm not writing double. And if I'm writing double, I'm not making a kinyan, because again, like we said, that this that you get half is when you're exaggerated. If you make a kinyan, then you get the whole thing. So he said, no, either one or the other. Either I'm going to make it look beautiful, which is double, but then I'm not making a kinyan, I'm not writing double. Now the Gemara brings out, there was a certain person related to the Salacha that said to others, and he was a person that was commanding certain things because he was about to die. He said, Havula arba me'ezuz labrati b'ksubasa. He says, give 400 zuz to my daughter for her ksuba. Now, Shalach Ravacha b'reder of Avi l'kameder of Ashi, he sent the question in front of Ravashi. This that this dying man said, that give it to my daughter liksubasa for her ksuba, which was for the ksuba, is it, which is that that's how much should be written in the ksuba, or is it that's how much should be collected from the ksuba? Which, as Rashi points out, the question was in a place where the minig was to write double of what was actually being given. So the question is, Arba Meya, was he saying 400? Di'inun, which that means to say that they are, you should write in the ksuba, Tamni Meya, which you write then double in the ksuba, which is 800. Oy Arba Meya Zuzi, or maybe he was saying no, to write 400. Di'inun Masin, which are really 200 for collection, because you write double of what it is. So when he said give 400, did he mean to give 400 and then to write 800? Or did he mean to write 400 and therefore you give half of that, which is 200? So Amar Vashti says Chazina, so we see. What are the words that he used? I Amar Havula, if he said give her, so Arba Meizuz, he's saying to give her 400 zuz, di'inun Tamni Meir, which that is, and what do you write in the ksuba? You write double, which is 800. I Amar Kesuvula, but if he said write for her in her ksuba 400, so that's Arba Meizuzi, Dina Masin, which then the collection is only half of that, which is 200. Ikidami, let's say a different version, that Amar Vashi said, Chazina, we see a different syntax in what the sentence is. He says, Iyamar liksubasa, if he said, give her 200 for her ksuba, the lamid, liksubasa, is for the ksuba, which is for the collection of the ksuba. So that's Arba Meizuzi, Dina Tamni Mei, which that means say you write 800. But the Iyamar big subasa, but if he said that in the ksuba, which sounds like to write for her in the document of the ksuba, Arba Meizuz 400 zuz, that means to say that you're writing 400 dinam masin, which that's only collecting 200. And that says the Gemara regarding the second version, that Velahi. That's not the case. Because Leishna Dama Lukusubasa doesn't make a difference if he said for her Ksuba. For Leishna Dama, big Subasa, doesn't make a difference if he said in her Ksuba. Abba Meya Zuzi de Inimasa. Either way, if you just, regarding that particular, Liksubasa, big Subasa would be writing 400, which is a collection of 200. The Amar Habulos Dama, until he says, give her. And would unspecify. It says, give her, just saying Havu. That would go ahead and now say, giving her 400, which is obviously giving her 400, and then you write 800. That's what the defining factor would be. Now the Gemara goes back to what we were talking about before regarding these halachas of HaMakabal Sad Mechaveri. So the Gemara says, who gabed the kabal ar mechaveri? There was a certain person that accepted a sharecropping job from his friend for his land. Amar, he said, imavran Allah, he guaranteed his friend, he says, look, if I don't work the field, if I leave it fallow, I know you give me a good price because we're doing sharecropping, you'll get a certain amount of the profits. So if I don't work the field, I'll pay you 1,000 zuz. So actually, Iver Tilsa, he worked a lot of the field, but he left a third of it fallow, that he didn't work. So Amar Nardoi, so then Nardoi said, Dinahu diyavli, so the law should be that he should give him tlas meya b'tlasin b'tilsa b'tilsa. He should give him 333 and a third, which is one third of the field, which is one third of the 1,000 that he promised him. He promised him 1,000, not proportionately. What you left fallow, you have to give him the payment that you said you'll give him if you don't work the field. Now Rav Amar, he disagreed. He says, no. This is what's known in halacha as hasmachtahi. It's an asmachta, which literally means to say like a reliance. Now, asmachta leikanya. An asmachta does not create a kinyan. In other words, asmachta is something that a guy thought he's going to work the field. So he says, you know what? If I don't, I'll give you 1,000. He didn't really mean to. So therefore, there's no true kinyan. There's no true akna here. And therefore, it's not a kinyan. And therefore, it does not rely. It doesn't have to pay him that 333 and a third. Now, the Gemara asks, but a l'rava, according to Rava, ma'ishna waditam, why is it different than halacha of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said, it said, im oivu le'evid, remeir hadarshan, based on loshen hedid, since people write a document in the sharecropping, he says, im oivu le'evid, if I'm going to leave it fell, I'm not going to work it, asham b'meitava, I'll pay the projected growth. And that was the halacha of the Mishnah. He has to pay the projected growth for not having planted it. So why is it any different than this halacha that Rava is saying, that you don't have to pay? That says the Gemara, no, they're fundamentally different. Hasam lekugazim. There in the halacha of the Mishnah, the one who took the job of the sharecropping, when he accepted responsibility, there was no exaggeration over there. That was based on judgment. It's not an asmachta, because that's the loss he's creating for him. He had a field, and you promised you're going to plant it. Now there was a certain projected growth, and now that I'm not getting that, so you wrote that document, of course you're accepting responsibility. But hacha kimin the common milsi say rasa. But here in this case that Rava is discussing with Nardai, here the guy said something way beyond. You don't have to promise me you're going to give him 1,000 zuz. Okay, you promise you're going to give 1,000 zuz if you don't plant the field. That's what's called guzma ba'amuhu de kugazm. He's just exaggerating. Saying, yeah, I'll give you $1,000. He didn't mean that. He thought for sure he was going to do it. That's what's known in halacha as asmachta. If he promised regarding exactly what's going to be the loss, does that make sense? But say, I'm going to give you $1,000, that's just an empty promise. Doesn't really mean it, and therefore there's not akna, and therefore he doesn't have to pay him. Continuing on these halachas, the Gemara says, "Who gavur the kabel ar l'shem shemid?" A certain person that received a job of arisus, of planting a person's field, l'shem shemid, that the job was that he had promised him for the sharecropping, he's going to plant sesame seeds, which are more valuable than wheat, but however, they also weaken the land much more than wheat. Now, actually, zarachiti, he didn't end up planting sesame seeds; he actually planted wheat. But of the chiti k'shem shemid, it ended up that crop ended up being very wildly successful, and even the price of wheat went up. So the price of wheat ended up being the value of sesame seeds. So it turned out that the landowner did not lose anything by his change of produce, and actually he gained, because regarding the weakening of the land, it would have gotten worse, the land, by the planting of the sesame seeds more than wheat. And now since he planted wheat, it actually saved him on the weakening of his field. So Rav Kana thought to say that menakile. So we diminish the landowner's portion of the value according to kach shodara. What it would have weakened if he had planned, as according to the plan, the sesame seeds, it would have weakened it more than the wheat that he ended up planting. So therefore, the landowner should not take in the profits of the wheat proportionally exactly to the measurement of the sesame seeds that he would have gotten, because here his land didn't weaken so much because of the wheat. So regarding those savings, he should lose a little bit in the profits. Now that only Rav Ashi, Rav Kana, Rav Ashi said Rav Kana, no. Amar Inchi, people say, Kach She'ara, let the land weaken. In other words, he should have planted sesame seeds, even if the land would have gotten more weak. And that not let the master become weak. In other words, that he should have to take less in the profits, and then him and his family would have to starve. In other words, although you gave him savings in his field, that's not what he wants. He wants profit. That's what he's looking for. He wants to have income. And therefore, the fact that you saved him in the land, that's not a reason to diminish from him how much money he would have gotten with sesame seeds. So although you saved him on that end, he still has the right to get that amount of value. He would have had the sesame seeds now from the good wheat crop, which actually came out to the same exact value of the sesame crop. Similarly, the Gemara brings Hahu Gavra, the Kabal Arla Shumshim, a certain person that had rented a field for sharecropping from his friend to plant sesame seeds. But Zarachiti changed the crop and he planted wheat. Now, of the Chiti Tfeimin Shumshim, in this incident, the wheat actually produced better. The price of wheat went up and was so successful that crop and was worth more than actually sesame seeds. So Sav Ravina Lamemus, Ravina thought to say that Yoivle, that they should give, that the landowner should give back to the sharecropper, Shivcha de Beni Beni, the value that's in between. In other words, he should diminish from his portion and not take, rather only according to the value of what he would have gotten had, as according to the plan, that the sharecropper would have planted sesame seeds, because it's the sharecropper that caused the increase of the gain because he changed it to wheat. So that difference between the sesame seeds and wheat, which now wheat is more than sesame seeds, that addition, that for sure he shouldn't get. He was only supposed to plant sesame seeds. Actually, he even made it better because now he's landing it weaker. For that, not. Because we said the guy would prefer profit. But to take more than the profit because he changed it, that was the sharecropper's doing. The sharecropper should take that difference between the sesame seed value and the wheat. On that, Amr Ravachim Adif Ravin, he says, no. Atuhu Ashbach, what, you think only the sharecropper, because he changed and planted wheat, he increased the value of their profit margin? And Aroloi Ashbach, you think the land didn't? No, it's not just the wheat. It's also the land that helped, and the landowner therefore still gets his fair share according to the wheat, even though that's more than the value that was supposed to get from the sesame seeds. Nothing more continues also on these partnerships, like we're having with the landowner and the aris. So the Gemara continues in a related vein. Amin Ardai. Hai Iska. This Iska, which in this context that means to say what's known as if someone takes merchandise from an owner, and that guy has a lot of merchandise, he's not going to do all the work. So he gives it to an individual, and they evaluate how much it's worth right now, the product where they are. Then the worker would go ahead and take it somewhere else where the price is much greater, so that he could sell it for a profit over there. And then they would share the profit. So one guy provides the merchandise, and the other one provides the work. And then the worker takes it somewhere else, makes a certain profit margin, and they split that profit. So says Nardai, this iska, this business deal, palga, half of the liability if something like an oinus happens to it, is considered as a milva, as a loan, from the owner of the merchandise to the worker. Well, palga, and half of the liability is on the owner, because as a loan, the liability is all on the borrower, which we call the worker in this case. But half of it is, liability is going to be on the owner, like a pikadon, like a deposit. Which a deposit, okay, if an oinus is beyond his control, and therefore, like a shomer sachar or seicher, the liability is going to be on the owner. Now, the reason for this, says Nardai, is because Avad Rabbanan Milsa, the Rabbanan went and made this takana, which is preferable for both of them, where it's the nichle l'leiva, it's preferable for the borrower, and the nichle l'malvin is also preferable for the lender, meaning the owner of the merchandise, we call him the lender, and the one who's doing the work, we call him the leiva. Now the reason for this is, as the Rashbam explains about Baba Basra, is because there's some liability on one, and there's some liability on the other one, because it's half that's going to be the loss for the borrower, the worker, because it's considered halva, and half is going to be a loss on the owner of the merchandise, where, because it's going to be considered as a pikadon. The reason why that's preferable is because if it all gets lost or stolen, so it's not one person that's getting all the loss, rather it's going to be split between the two of them. That's okay. I don't want that all the loss should be mine. Neither one of them wants that, so it's half and half. Therefore, that's how the Rabbanan made this iska, that it's half and half. Which additionally, there's another concept we spoke about in Perek Eizu Neshech, which is regarding the halachas of ribis, where there's another additional component over there that has to be introduced regarding the profit, that it doesn't seem like ribis. But that's how the iska is divided. Now, based on this said in our day, Hashda Amin Palgamilvi, now that we said that this is how the Rabbanan made this operation, that it's half that is alone. So regarding that half that's alone, Ibay Lemishta Be Shikra, if the borrower, this worker, wants to go ahead and use that half of the monies to drink beer, in other words, what it means to say is even if he wants to use that half of the money for his household expenses, so shaper dami. So he has that prerogative, he has that ability. He can use it because ultimately half of that is a loan. Now, although really all the money was given for him to spend on the merchandise, but ultimately for the halachic purposes, the Rabbanan made it into half a deposit, half a loan. So obviously the deposit party cannot misappropriate. But regarding the loan part, ultimately it's a loan and it's his responsibility. So he could take that money and now decide to use that loan for other things, to buy supper for his family. Now Rav Amahi disagrees. He says no. Lahachi karu la le iska. Now that's why they called it an iska, which means to say an asik, a business deal. Because the amar le, because he's the owner of the merchandise, is telling the worker, Kiya havinalach, when I gave you this quote-unquote loan, it wasn't for you to go ahead and use it for your whatever purposes. This loan was earmarked, le'asukibe, to use it for the business deals. Now, what does that mean? Because since you're going to be using it for this venture, this business venture, that usually gain money, because that part of it is considered like a loan, so then you're going to put an effort and work hard on the other half, which is a deposit, which is for me to make profit. And v'loy le'mishtabi shekher, it wasn't given to you so you could drink beer. Because then you're not going to work hard on my money. The whole point of making half a loan and half a deposit was that you'll work hard for your half, then it's in the same venture as mine, you'll work hard for my half too. And therefore, he disagreed, Rav, and he says you can't use it for other things but the iska. Similarly, Amrav Idaber Avin, he says, V'imeis, if the borrower, who we're calling this worker, if he dies, now, this iska, this merchandise that he has, which again, half of the merchandise is considered a loan, half of it is considered a deposit. Now his children are holding on to that iska. Now, as we said, so therefore half of that is a loan, says Rav Idaber Avin. So if he dies, nasa metalton leitz labanav. So it's a merchandise, it's a movable item. It becomes movable items by orphans. And therefore now, the original owner of the merchandise cannot collect it from the orphans. Because the well-known halacha is called metalton diyasmi lemishtav d'balchay. Movable items of orphans do not become indebted to a creditor. So he's now a creditor trying to collect what he gave to this worker from the orphans. And since it's movable items, and it's a halva, a deposit, it's his. He can go ahead and take it. But the half that's a loan, it's a debt. Debt, which is movable item debt, you cannot collect anymore. Now Rav Am, again, Rav disagrees, and he says, no. Lahachi karu la iska. That's why the owner of the merchandise called it an iska. Why? So that it should constantly be around, and as he disagreed in the previous halacha, it's got to be used constantly, only to be used for the business deal. Now, therefore, the owner of the merchandise is reliant and knows that it's always going to be around, because this quote-unquote borrower can't use it for any other purposes, but rather for the business deal that they have. So therefore, the reason why I called it isk is that the imeis, so that if the borrower dies, he'll be able to collect it. And lo yasa metatlan eitz labanav, that it will not be quote unquote a metatlan movable items that is a debt to be collected from the orphans, because since it has to be around, he relies on it as one relies on karka. Because what's the reason why metatli of yasmi are not meshubet b'chayiv? That's because originally he doesn't rely on that when the debt happened with his debtor to rely on movable items, because he can't be confident he'll be able to collect from the movable items, because the borrower, the debtor, could go ahead and use it for other things. Movable items, you could go ahead and send it to Switzerland. You could send it somewhere else. Now, however, these movable items, the borrower cannot expend it and send it somewhere else, because as Rebbe holds, that's why he called it an iska, that it should only be used for the iska, and therefore he is reliant on it, that it will always be there that he could collect from. So that's the equivalent of karka, which the concept is, that's why it's always called nechasim sheshel machrayis, is liability. You're confident because you can't move land. So too in this halacha context, the guy can't move this movable item of the merchandise because it has only be able to be used, even though we're also considered halva, but it's only earmarked for this iska, and therefore the money's always going to be there, and he's confident. Since he's confident, so then that's included in the debt that's owed to him, and therefore he could collect it even from the orphan. So therefore Rava says that it's not true. If he dies, it's not metal nesel banav, and rather he could go ahead and collect not only the bukkadin part, but even the other half, which we call the loan, since he's relying that he could collect even that from the orphans of his worker that passed away.